you got to give them something that, that gives them biological slack. So, yeah, that's what the products are. That's why it's we're not in medicine. We're on a whole other level. We're new agriculture. We're a new food.
A new food.
Hey, Bob,
group.
With those profound words, I'm going to sign off. It's been great. Thank you.
Yeah, Ginny, it's been great. I'm going to jump off soon. Great chatting.
Yeah, very
great,
Ginny.
Chatting with you too, Dave. Thanks,
maybe,
Bob.
What's his name? Ed will excerpt this, call it something. What is happening this week? Why were we doing all this? Like, we did something recently. Well, some important things that happened in our world. What do we call this, Ginny? What are we responding to? We're responding to something for you with the private session and the Queen thing. What is the Queen? We're discussing Queen as an archetype. That's how it started.
Yes, that's right.
And then we went into places like we try to do on the Zappa discussion that no one who's into Queen would believe what we got out of this by talking about
correct.
Queen. So maybe we'll call it the Queen Memorial.
Hey, one last thing before we all jump off, or some of us jump off, is, and while you're still on, Ginny, you know, I was wondering, Bob, with your shows, I've been looking up quickly. Have you tried them or looked at them more? Voice to text transcriptions, supposedly they're like 80-90% accurate, really close. And so you could just run them on your shows, and then you could just create the text. Because you had, like, say, a show a couple Tuesdays ago where you explained the difference between the Platonic tradition and the Aristotelian tradition. And it was beautifully laid out. And I thought, bang, there's an article you could throw back at Alice Couscous or whatever when he said, Bob, you know, your stuff is interesting, but no one's going to wade through the material. And I thought, there's an example right there. There's a 500-word fucking awesome essay of the day on Bob's thoughts about that. Almost like Carolyn's, you know, little modules or something, you know? So I'm wondering, now I looked it up quickly.
Oh,
I think
it's being done. It's being
done. Oh, goody. Oh, sweet. So she's gotten this some kind of software to do exactly that. Awesome. Awesome, buddy. That's excellent, you know, because once you get it into that form, I know even when I did the Bob album, you know, I spent a lot of time transcribing your tapes and shit you gave me. And just to put it in that word form kind of it was like a kaleidoscope. It's all now on one flat plane versus wading through the tape. So, yeah, it is kind of so that's great. That's great that she's doing that. Yeah, I was thinking that very recently, you know, and that was a solution to what Alex had said, because you come up with this shit, but it's a hassle to go through and transcribe it. But if someone could go through and do it like that and transcribe it relatively fast and quickly get, and like, look at this section, there it is, there's your essay, here's a 700-word essay, here's a 400-word essay on this topic, fuck, Bob, in no time you could generate a fucking encyclopedia.
Right. Now, so Chad knew about this technology, and, you know, he and Kate are over in Serbia and Europe and that. So he gave Kate this task, and she says she loves it. Like, you listen to it. She's listening to the audio and watching the transcription, and she can slow it down and, you know, control it. And she was finding it mind-blowing, reading what was being said.
What, how accurate it is.
Yeah. And also what was being said.
Yeah. And hearing it, watch it printed out from oral form to visual form. Yeah, fucking awesome.
Yeah,
really cool.
Best job she's ever had. This is the best job she's ever had.
Cool. So has she given you any excerpts already? Sent you emails?
No.
Been emailing you? Oh, but she just started doing this, like, in the last few weeks.
Yeah, like four or five months ago. She's done a lot.
Okay, funny, because I looked it up, and the Apple, like, you can get it, but what it does is apparently it does it only in 40-second chunks, but then there's other softwares where it'll just, like, do whole big long passes.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
So what's happening on my Facebook page, which you don't look at, you're not on Facebook, you've got Bert and Brent, they're transcribing little sound bites, and they post them, and they're pretty good.
Cool. Can you put them up in your Bob and Ion page or something? Or,
yeah,
or, I don't know.
I
start a new page. Maybe
Brent
start another Bob page or something. Or I don't know. Or put an augment.
I asked Brent the other day, "Are you saving everything you transcribe? Are you saving?" He said, "Yeah, I've got a file folder." So we would give that file folder to Ed, and he'd make a section on Ion and Bob.
Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah, a little index of stuff like that and on McLuhan topics or what have you. Well, also just the index would be like, oh, you know, like what topics, you know, but in other words, when they go through and get all these different sections, they'll be about certain topics. So they'll probably, you'll come up with some kind of title. That'll almost be, what do you call it on the index? And then you push that link and there's the thing. Yeah. And then also you can then contribute them to the more academic McLuhan guys too, as like, okay, here's my treatise on this and here's what this. Yeah, fucking cool. Yeah. And it's all derived from the way you like to do it, from riffing and just talking nonsense. Yeah. Well, or starting
like
with nonsense.
Channeling nonsense.
Yeah. Yeah, start with nonsense.
Well, that's what, who am I thinking of? Somebody in the media. What show? Channeling nonsense. What show did we...
Survivor?
Oh, yeah, maybe Survivor. Designated Survivor or some other phenomenon. Now, the other thing is... They're trying to make a big paradigm shift out of Tuesday and the election. And that's what I commented on. I said, that's trivial to the ongoing pressure of living in the chip body. Like, nothing's going to stop on November 7th. You know.
Right. Yeah.
But the population wants a, I think Toffler predicted this in Future Jar, that people will need things like the Olympics to have a sense of stopping and we assess where we're at. It's almost like all the competition, all the meritocracy, you got to have winners, you got to have the Oscars. Toffler, and I thought it was very corny, saying this in 1970, that Super Bowl is a good thing. Because it allows people to have a sense of community, and they stop and breathe, and they say, oh, now we know who achieved something. These guys won the Super Bowl. You know what I mean?
Right.
And probably back then...
There's still an ongoing process that matters.
What?
That there's an ongoing process that matters.
Yeah. Well, now you can see the reasoning of it even more so, because no one knew the information overload would be like it is now. Back in 1970, back then I would have just said, well, you just need to turn off TV to get the breather, but that couldn't be done. So now you have the Android meme leaving humans behind, and humans like need a breather to remind themselves that we might could have been human. So they have the Oscars and the Olympics and elections.
Yeah.
You know. Midterms. And, you know, the whole media, more and more over the last 20 years, focused on the fucking elections. Like, they're going to, since the midterm is over, what's the big question? Is Hillary going to run again? And you have to fucking put up with that.
Right. Oh, I know. It's like, this is like Halloween, this election, and when it's over, the Christmas lights are coming up.
Yeah, that's right. You know, at the Lapper's ice cream store, Carol, 2 weeks ago, Chad had to wear a Scrooge hat, some 19th century old Victorian thing, because they're promoting Halloween 2 weeks before fucking Halloween. Holy shit, man.
I know, it's like, October 31st, Halloween, next day, fucking put up the Christmas lights. In fact, you know what some people have been doing around here? They've been merging. They'll put up the Christmas lights and augment it with Halloween paraphernalia, and then when Halloween's over, just pull the Halloween paraphernalia up and leave the Christmas lights.
Right.
You kind of do it all in one shot.
Zappa said in the Bob Marshall interview, he talked about the increasing nostalgia. He says the world is not going to end in fire, paper, or paperwork, or something else. It'll end in nostalgia. And he says it's going to get to the point where we'll be so nostalgic for the previous 5 minutes that the world will stop. So there's a kind of, holding on to the past that gets more and more intense.
Well, it also reflects the speed up, that to the last five minutes will seem like thousands of years ago. Remember what we thought 5 minutes ago? Damn, that's historical.
Yeah, like the, I guess it'll get to the point where Halloween will not be noticed because we never stopped having Halloween in the previous year.
Or I can't help but be cliche, Bobby. Or as ministry said, every day is Halloween.
Ministry?
Yeah, remember they were big on CKLN. Gong, gong. Every day is Halloween. It was a great title, too, that's a title. Every day is Halloween.
Right, and it must have been a reason why Zappa said it was his favorite holiday.
His holiday, he loved it.
He had a lot of metaphors in there.
Yeah, he was he was on this NBC interview, I remember, and the hostess, the interviewer, she said, "Frank, what do you make all this year of all the shit people are putting in candies and stuff like that?" And he says, "Oh, we're entering a new dark age." I think we're entering a new dark age.
Well, Smoking Pumpkin, that is the image on his albums, was the pumpkin, the inflamed pumpkin.
Yeah.
Now, this has made, the whole Halloween thing has made one person a super megalomaniac, because their birthday is on October 31st, and in Mexico they celebrate it for 2 days. They celebrate All Saints, whatever it is, November 1st and November 2nd. It's almost a week-long celebration. Big important holiday. And so this person has their birthday right in the middle of that. So they end up celebrating their birthday for a whole week. You know who that is?
Roxy.
Right. So she's been lost. What do you say? Missing in action for about 5 days now. Because she's Berlin celebrating her Halloween and her birthday.
And that's true with Mexicans. They fucking love that shit. When it's like, at least when I was there in the small town, man, when it's like a certain holiday or that, everyone gets into it, and it's like a chance to, like, everyone
get out.
Oh, that's
a good point, Dave.
Yeah.
You experienced this. So I came up with this concept the other day. Because there's so much death in Mexico, it's the most violent culture in the world right now. And it might be number two, it might be number one. Death squads, it's really bad. And Even Roxy's parents told her not to come back because
she'd
be hijacked on a country road and killed.
Yeah.
So it's very bad. Now, then Roxy says, but Mexicans know there's no death. I mean, it's in their culture. They don't, they're pagans, They don't believe in one life.
They're in the spirits.
What?
They're in the spirits. They're the whole idea of spirits.
Yeah, and they have cults that celebrate death. There's this death skull thing.
Right, they have the death
realize,
day. Big holiday.
I knew there was something.
Yeah.
Dave, I said, I knew there was something funny about Mexico. I didn't. It's something I didn't know about until I met Roxy, and then she's filled me in a lot the last couple of years about the culture. It's quite interesting to me now. And I realized the other day, Mexico is a culture that's a Manichean satire of the human condition. It's a fucking Manichean satire. They kill people for no reason. They kill everybody. They're just making, in that way, they're a spiritual culture. They are showing, making people not get so focused on what they do because it could be snuffed out any minute. So, Roxy liked that idea, that her culture was a Manichean culture, satirizing the human enterprise.
Yeah.
So that was my big insight this week.
Yeah, well, remember that, but the Evergreens had almost put up something like that, like Bob used, I think, said them. So what, are you telling me that 250,000 people wanted to incarnate because they know some crazy madman would come and slaughter them viciously, and they actually wanted to experience that?
And they said, yep.
Yeah,
and that was early versions of Every Death's a Suicide.
Yeah.
Changed it a bit, but everybody said something like that. People create their situation and purposely wanted to die that way. Like Cambodia, they said, was like that, late 70s.
Right. And that's expressed here, like, as you're saying, with Ion said, Johnny went to Iraq, when he comes home and said, died honorably serving his country. More accurate would have been Johnny committed suicide honorably serving his country.
Yeah. Well, he committed suicide while honorably serving the non-physical dimension. He served that, and he showed that that was more important than the physical.
Right.
So the...
in other words, that it's not all over.
Right. Never ends.
Yeah. Ginny, are you still there? I know she had to go, and she did go.
Let me see. Sometimes the name stays lingering. Their name's still there, but they could have hung up.
Okay.
Reiner, are you still there? Or Lorne?
Reiner's still here,
yep,
but there.
Well, we haven't had... Lorne, do you want to say anything in light of the art part we talked about?
Yeah, super. I'm excited to read
Through the vanishing point.
Vanishing point and some cliched archetype. I think that's going to help me put words to the creative sponge that is also on the line right now here.
Right. Did you start reading Through the Vanishing Point?
No, I haven't been able to locate it in time, like, before I left.
I think libraries would have it. Oh, you're in L.A. That's different. Yeah, I don't know where
I'm leaving for 2 months, eh? Like, next Wednesday.
Right.
And so I am, I ordered it from UK Amazon, my friend's place in Portugal. So I'm going to get it then when I get across. In the meantime, I'm going to read War and Peace in the Global Village.
That's a great book.
And there is, that's one book I do have on me. I also have an illustrated guide to Heidegger, which is kind of cool. I mean, I'm just going to read it.
Right.
Because it comes up in our discussion about the allegorical minimalism with my buddy Graham. It brings Heidegger up a lot, and
when I was with some educated Americans in the William Irwin Thompson seminar at the Cathedral St. John the Divine, they didn't know that McLuhan could be considered a philosopher. They said, well, we thought Heidegger was the big guy of the 20th century. So a lot of Americans are educated around him being the major philosopher, and they don't know McLuhan's critique of Heidegger in Laws of Media.
All right. Hey, a question about a book that I've been trying to call, like, all the rare bookstores, like, to try to get, like, a copy of, like, The Vanishing Point or Cliched Archetype or anything, but nobody has anything here in L.A.
What, from Cliched Archetype is not available?
Like, none of them have any of them.
eBay should have it, no?
They were all, hey, Dave, a lot of the used bookstores, which are, I don't even know if they're around anymore, but a lot of them sold out in the 90s when the McLuhan
sure,
revival
sure,
happened.
Right. I think eBay would be the way to go, or, wouldn't they have them if there's any
they're
listings?
They're all over online. They're just not going to get to L.A. before I leave L.A.
Gotcha. You can't pick up a local copy.
I tried to use an old technology that doesn't seem to be pulling its way.
Bookstore. It's waning, buddy.
It's like
I haven't heard that phrase in a long time. They're not pulling their weight.
Yeah.
That's a nautical thing.
So what they do have, though, is Verve Vocal Visual Explorations.
Yeah. There's an essay on art at the end of that in part two that wasn't done by McLuhan. He got a few art buddies to do a few little essays.
Is it worth $75 for a hard copy?
No.
The McLuhan part
is valuable, but you should try to get it at a cheaper price.
I found a free copy of it.
Get a free copy.
I got it. I got it already.
You didn't turn down the free copy.
Reiner, do you have Through the Vanishing Point?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. There it is.
Well, now, what was the gist? He says we've gone through the vanishing point. Is that with the electrification starting with the telegraph?
Yeah. It's an inventory of space in poetry and painting. So there's like 49 exhibits, and there's a poem. From through chronology, all through history, there's a poem and then a painting. And he explains the resonance and stylistic similarities between the poem and the painting of that era.
Mm-hmm.
So the very first exhibit, I think, is cave art for the painting and a poem by the Eskimos.
Neat.
That's the Paleolithic culture, their art.
Yeah.
Pictorial and acoustic. Oh, well, wait a minute. Yeah, poetry can be acoustic. So pictorial, sculptural. Anyway, so it's Through the Vanishing Point, space in poetry and painting. So the different media spaces through human history.
Yes.
And he shows the arts and how they get shifted by new technology and how they're common, the poetry and the painting.
Can you remember some other chapters? Can you recall some other chapters, like some of the pairings in other chapters? Yeah.
There's around the time of Christ, there's the early Byzantine sculpture So Byzantine,
okay, like Greco-Roman stuff
or something.
Yeah.
And then they'll have some epic, Gilgamesh, or not Gilgamesh, Beowulf or something. So there was epic poetry in the medieval period and iconic cathedral art.
Right.
Then one of them in the time of the printing press, it's Rembrandt, some woman looking at a skull, mm-hmm. and... the poetry would have been Milton or somebody like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got a lot of people. You learn a lot about different poets through the years and learn a lot of mm-hmm. different paintings. So then it gets up to, I think it has Jackson Pollock painting beside Phidias Wake and Homer. They eventually retrieve Homer.
Wow.
As a tactile expression of poetry.
That was McLuhan. That was one of his themes, eh? That we've the world of Homer that was wiped out by the phonetic alphabet is now come back. Yes, and remember when he says that at one of his lectures, some of the people in the audience start clapping, and he's like, "Well, before you applaud,"
that's right. Yeah, no, he talks about rock retrieving the Homeric.
That's right, and a few people cheer. There's a smattering of applause.
You were there. Yeah. You were there in 99 or so at your place when Nelson got word from Mary McLuhan that the Grateful Dead wanted an excerpt, and we sent him the excerpt. And I remember you being part of the organizing of that.
Mm.
Do you remember?
Vaguely, yeah.
Sent them... We sent them McLuhan in 1974 saying that rock was destroying literacy. And we later heard that the Grateful Dead played it on the New Year's thing, and it was well-liked by everybody. But they liked the McLuhan excerpt we sent, which was kind of a satire on them. We had McLuhan warning people about Grateful Dead.
Yeah, and they probably loved it that the Grateful Dead would play it, too.
They had whooped McLuhan. They had beat him. And they were gratefully dead.
The great. That's part of their jam. It's like Ellen will talk about the disservices of the Grateful Dead or other angles of the Grateful Dead, and it doesn't have to be just fandom or thing.
Yeah,
I could
the
see
Grateful
why it would...
Dead refers to all the literate Americans in the middle of the 20th century. They got wiped out, and they're kind of grateful for it.
Yeah, they come and just listen to the jams and hang out and get high.
Yeah, they got put out of their misery, out of their literate misery, where they're trying to figure out a novel.